Mrs. Cake drew the curtains.
"Who exactly is One Man Bucket?" said Windle.
She lit a couple of candles and sat down.
"He belonged to one of them heathen Hawandaland tribes," she said shortly.
"Very strange name, One Man Bucket," said Windle.
"It's not his full name," said Mrs. Cake darkly. "Now we've got to hold hands."
She looked at him speculatively.
"We need someone else."
"I could call Schleppel," said Windle.
"I ain't having no bogey under my table trying to look up me drawers," said Mrs. Cake. "Ludmilla!" she shouted.
After a moment or two, the bead curtain leading into the kitchen was swept aside, and the young woman who had originally opened the door to Windle came in.
"Yes, mother?"
"Sit down, girl. We need another one for the seancing."
"Yes, mother."
The girl smiled at Windle.
"This is Ludmilla," said Mrs. Cake shortly.
"Charmed, I'm sure," said Windle.
Ludmilla gave him the bright, crystalline smile perfected by people who had long ago learned not to let their feelings show.
"We have already met," said Windle.
It must be at least a day since the full moon, he thought. All the signs are nearly gone. Nearly? Well, well, well.
"She's my shame," said Mrs. Cake.
"Mother, you do go on,"
said Ludmilla without rancour.
"Join hands," said Mrs. Cake.
They sat in the semi-darkness. Then Windle felt Mrs. Cake's hand being pulled away.
"I forgot about the glass," she said.
"I thought, Mrs. Cake, that you didn't hold with Ouija boards and that sort of..."
Windle began. There was a glugging noise from the sideboard. Mrs. Cake put a glass on the tablecloth and sat down again.
"I don't," she said.
Silence descended again. Windle cleared his throat nervously. Eventually, Mrs. Cake said,
"All right, One Man Bucket, I knows you're there."
The glass moved. The amber liquid inside sloshed gently. A bodiless voice quavered,
"Greetings, pale fish, from the happy hunting ground."
"You stop that," said Mrs. Cake. "Everyone knows you got run over by a cart in Treacle Street because you was drunk, One Man Bucket."
"It's not my fault. Not my fault. Is it my fault my great-granddad moved here? By rights, I should have been mauled to death by a mountain lion or a giant mammoth or something. I've been denied my death right."
"Mr. Poons here wants to ask you a question, One Man Bucket," said Mrs. Cake.
"She is happy here, and waiting for you to join her," said One Man Bucket.
Who is?" said Windle.
This seemed to fox One Man Bucket. It was a line that generally satisfied without further explanation.
"Who would you like?"
he asked cautiously.
"Can I have that drink now?"
"Not yet, One Man Bucket," said Mrs. Cake.
"Well, I need it. It's bloody crowded in here."
"What?"
said Windle quickly.
"With ghosts, you mean?"
"There's hundreds of them,"
said the voice of One Man Bucket. Windle was disappointed.
"Only hundreds," he said. "That doesn't sound a lot."
"Not many people become ghosts," said Mrs. Cake. "To be a ghost, you've got to have, like, serious unfinished business, or a terrible revenge to take, or a cosmic purpose in which you are just a pawn."
"Or a cruel thirst," said One Man Bucket.
"Will you hark at him?" said Mrs. Cake.
"I wanted to stay in the spirit world, or even wine and beer."
"So what happens to the life force if things stop living?" said Windle. "Is that what's causing all this trouble?"
"You tell the man," said Mrs. Cake, when One Man Bucket seemed reluctant to answer.
"What trouble you talking about?"
"Things unscrewing, clothes running around by themselves, everyone feeling more alive, that sort of thing."
That's nothing. See, the life force leaks back where it can. You don't need to worry about that."
Windle put his hand over the glass.
"But there is something I should be worrying about, isn't there?"
he said flatly.
"It's to do with the little glass souvenirs."
"Don't like to say."
"Do tell him."
It was Ludmilla's voice, deep, but somehow attractive. Lupine was watching her intently. Windle smiled. That was one of the advantages about being dead. You spotted things the living ignored. One man Bucket sounded shrill and petulant.
"What's he going to do if I tell him, then? I could get into heap big trouble for that sort of thing."
"Well, you can tell me if I guess right," said Windle.
"Yes, maybe."
"You don't have to say anything," said Mrs. Cake. "Just knock twice for yes and once for no, like in the old days."
"Oh, all right."
"Go on, Mr. Poons," said Ludmilla. She had the kind of voice Windle wanted to stroke. He cleared his throat.
"I think," he began, "that is, I think there's some sort of eggs. I thought, why breakfast? And then I thought, eggs."
Knock.
"Oh, well, perhaps it was a rather silly idea."
"Sorry, was it once for yes or twice for yes?"
"Twice," snapped the medium. Knock, knock.
"Ah," breathed Windle, "and they hatch into something with wheels on."
"Twice for yes, was it?"
"Right." Knock, knock.
"I thought so, I thought so. I found one under my floor that tried to hatch where there wasn't enough room," crowed Windle.
Then he frowned.
"But hatch into what?"
Mustrum Ridcully trotted into his study and took his wizard's staff from its rack over the fireplace. He licked his finger and gingerly touched the top of the staff. There was a small octarine spark and a smell of greasy tin. He headed back for the door. Then he turned around slowly because his brain had just had time to analyse the study's cluttered contents and spot the oddity.
"What the hell's that doing there?" he said.
He prodded it with the tip of his staff. It gave a jingling noise and rolled a little away. It looked vaguely, but not very much, like the sort of thing the maids trundled around, loaded with mops and fresh linen and whatever it was maids pushed around. Ridcully made a mental note to take it up with the housekeeper. Then he forgot about it.
"Damn wire wheely things are getting everywhere," he muttered.
Upon the word "damn," something like a large blue bottle with cat-sized dentures flopped out of the air, fluttered madly as it took stock of its surroundings, and then flew after the unheeding Arch-Chancellor. The words of wizards have power, and swear words have power. And with life force practically crystallizing out of the air, it had to find outlets wherever it could.
"Cities," said one man Bucket. "I think they're city eggs."
The senior wizards gathered again in the great hall. Even the senior wrangler was feeling a certain excitement. It was considered bad form to use magic against fellow wizards, and using it against civilians was unsporting. It did you good to have a really righteous zap occasionally. The Arch-Chancellor looked them over.
"Dean, why have you got stripes all over your face?" he inquired.
"Camouflage, Arch-Chancellor."
"Camouflage, eh?
Yo, Arch-Chancellor."
"Oh well, so long as you feel happy in yourself, that's what matters."
They crept out towards the patch of ground that had been Modo's little territory. At least most of them crept. The Dean advanced in a series of spinning leaps, occasionally flattening himself against the wall and saying, "Hut, hut, hut," under his breath. He was absolutely crestfallen when the other heaps turned out to be still where Modo had built them. The gardener, who had tagged along behind and had twice nearly been flattened by the Dean, fussed around them for a while.
"They're just lying low," said the Dean. "I say we blow up the godsdam."
"They're not even warm yet," said Modo. "That one must have been the oldest."
"You mean we haven't got anything to fight?" said the Arch-Chancellor.
The ground shook underfoot, and then there was a faint jangling noise from the direction of the cloisters. Ridcully frowned.
"Someone's pushing those damn wire baskety things around again," he said.
"There was one in my study tonight."
"Hm," said the senior wrangler. "There was one in my bedroom. I opened the wardrobe and there it was."
"In your wardrobe? What did you put it in there for?"
said Ridcully.
"I didn't. I told you it was probably the students. It's their kind of humour. One of them put a hairbrush in my bed once."
"I fell over one earlier," said the Arch-Chancellor.
and then when I looked round for it, someone had taken it away.
The jingling noise got closer.
"Right, Mr. So-called Clever Dick young fellow, my lad," said Ridcully, tapping his staff once or twice on his palm in a meaningful way.
The wizards backed up against the wall. The phantom trolley pusher was almost on them. Ridcully snarled and leapt out of hiding.
"Aha! My fine young bloody hellfire!"
"Don't be pulling my leg," said Mrs. Cake. "Cities ain't alive. I know people says they are, but they don't mean really."
Windlepoons turned one of the snowballs around in his hand.
"It must be laying thousands of them," he said, "but they wouldn't all survive, of course. Otherwise, we'd be up to here in cities, yes?"
"You telling us that those little balls hatch out into huge places?" said Ludmilla.
"Not straight away. There's the mobile stage first."
"Something with wheels on," said Windle.
"That's right. I can see you know already."
"I think I knew," said Windlepoons, "but I didn't understand. And what happens after the mobile stage?"
"Don't know."
Windle stood up.
"Then it's time to find out," he said.
He glanced at Ludmilla and Lupine. "Ah, yes, and why not? If you can help somebody as you pass this way," Windle thought, "then your living, or whatever, shall not be in vain." He let himself fall into a stoop and let a little crackle enter his voice.
"But I'm rather unsteady on my legs these days," he quavered. "It would be really a great favour if someone could help me along. Could you see me as far as the university, young lady?"
"Ludmilla doesn't go out much these days because her health," Mrs. Cake began briskly.
"Is absolutely fine," said Ludmilla. "Mother, you know it's been a whole day since full moon."
"Ludmilla!"
"Well, it has.
It's not safe for a young woman to walk the streets these days," said Mrs. Cake.
"But Mr. Poons's wonderful dog would frighten away the most dangerous criminal," said Ludmilla.
On cue, Lupine barked helpfully and begged. Mrs. Cake regarded him critically.
"He's certainly a very obedient animal," she said reluctantly.
"That's settled then," said Ludmilla. "I'll fetch my shawl."
Lupine rolled over. Windle nudged him with a foot.
"Be good," he said.
There was a meaningful cough from One Man Bucket.
All right," said Mrs. Cake.
She took a bundle of matches from the dresser, lit one absent-mindedly with her fingernail, and dropped it into the whiskey glass. It burned with a blue flame, and somewhere in the spirit world the spectre of a stiff double lasted just long enough. As Windlepoons left the house, he thought he could hear a ghostly voice raised in song. The trolley stopped. It swiveled from side to side, as if observing the wizards. Then it did a fast three-point turn and trundled off at high speed.
"Get it!"
bellowed the Arch-Chancellor. He aimed his staff and got off a fireball which turned a small area of cobblestones into something yellow and bubbly. The speeding trolley rocked wildly but kept going, with one wheel rattling and squeaking.
"It's from the Dungeon Dimensions," said the Dean. "Cream the basket!"
The Arch-Chancellor laid a steadying hand on his shoulder.
"Don't be daft. Dungeon things have a lot more tentacles and things. They don't look made."
They turned at the sound of another trolley. It rattled unconcernedly down a side passage, stopped when it saw or otherwise perceived the wizards, and did a creditable impression of a trolley that had just been left there by someone. The bursar crept up to it.
"It's no use you looking like that," he said. "We know you can move."
"We all seed you," said the Dean.
The trolley maintained a low profile.
"It can't be thinking," said the lecturer in recent rooms. "There's no room for a brain."
"Who says it's thinking?" said the Arch-Chancellor. "All it does is move. Who needs brains for that? Prawns move."
He ran his fingers over the metalwork.
"Actually, prawns are quite intelligent,"
the senior wrangler began.
"Shut up," said Ridcully.
"Is this made, though?"
It's wire, said the senior wrangler. Wire's something that you have to make. And there's wheels. Hardly anything natural's got wheels.
It's just that close up it looks...
All one thing, said the lecturer in recent runes, who had knelt down painfully to inspect it the better. Like one unit, made all in one lump, like a machine that's been grown. But that's ridiculous.
Maybe. Isn't there a sort of cuckoo in the ramtops that builds clocks to nest in?
Said the bursar. Yes, but that's just a courtship ritual, said the lecturer in recent runes airily. Besides, they keep lousy time.
The trolley leapt for a gap in the wizards, and would have made it except that the gap was occupied by the bursar, who gave a scream and pitched forward into the basket. The trolley didn't stop, but rattled onwards towards the gates. The dean raised his staff. The arch-chancellor grabbed it.
You might hit the bursar, he said.
Just one small fireball?
It's tempting, but...
No, come on, after it.
Yo!
If you like.
The wizards lumbered in pursuit. Behind them, as yet unnoticed, a whole flock of the Arch-Chancellor's swear words fluttered and buzzed, and Windle Poons was leading a small deputation to the library. The librarian of the Unseen University knuckled his way hurriedly across the floor as the door shook to a thunderous knocking.
"I know you're in there," came the voice of Windle Poons. "You must let us in. It's vitally important."
"Ooh!
You won't open the doors?"
Ooh.
Then you leave me no choice.
Ancient blocks of masonry moved aside slowly. Mortar crumbled. Then part of the wall fell in, leaving Windle Poons standing in a Windle Poons-shaped hole. He coughed on the dust.
I hate having to do that, he said. I can't help feeling it's pandering to popular prejudice.
The librarian landed on his shoulders. To the orangutan's surprise, this made very little difference. A 300-pound orangutan usually had a noticeable effect on the person's rate of progress, but Windle wore him like a collar.
"I think we need ancient history," he said. "I wonder, could you stop trying to twist my head off?"
The librarian looked around wildly. It was a technique that normally never failed. Then his nostrils flared. The librarian hadn't always been an ape. A magical library is a dangerous place to work, and he'd been turned into an orangutan as a result of a magical explosion. He'd been a quite inoffensive human, although by now so many people had come to terms with his new shape that few people remembered it. But with the change had come the key to a whole bundle of senses and racial memories, and one of the deepest, most fundamental, most born in the bone of all of them was to do with shapes. It went back to the dawn of sapience. Shapes with muzzles, teeth, and four legs were, in the evolving simian mind, definitely filed under bad news. A very large wolf had padded through the hole in the wall, followed by an attractive young woman. The librarian's signal input was temporarily fused.
Also, said Windle, it is just possible that I could knot your arms behind you.
Ooh!
He's not an ordinary wolf, you'd better believe it.
Ooh?
Windle lowered his voice.
And she might not technically be a woman, he added.
The librarian looked at Ludmilla. His nostrils flared again, his brow wrinkled.
All right, I may have put that rather clumsily. Do let go, there's a good fellow.
The librarian released his grip very cautiously and sank to the floor, keeping Windle between himself and Lupine. Windle brushed mortar fragments off the remains of his robe.
"We need to find out," he said, "about the lives of cities. Specifically, I need to know..."
There was a faint jangling noise. A wire basket rolled nonchalantly around the massive stack of the nearest bookcase. It was full of books. It stopped as soon as it realized that it had been seen, and contrived to look as though it had never moved at all.
"The mobile stage," breathed Windle Poons.
The wire basket tried to inch backwards without appearing to move. Lupine growled.
"Is that what One Man Bucket was talking about?"
said Ludmilla. The trolley vanished. The librarian grunted and went after it.
"Oh, yes, something that would make itself useful," said Windle,
suddenly almost manically cheerful.
"That's how it'd work. First, something that you'd want to keep and put away somewhere. Thousands wouldn't get the right conditions, but that wouldn't matter because there would be thousands.
and then the next stage would be something that would be handy and get everywhere, and no one would ever think it had got there by itself. But it's all happening at the wrong time.
But how can a city be alive? It's only made up of dead parts, said Ludmilla.
So are people. Take it from me.
I know.
But you are right, I think. This shouldn't be happening. It's all this extra life force. It's tipping the balance. It's turning something that isn't really real into a reality. And it's happening too early. And it's happening too fast.
There was a squeal from the librarian. The trolley erupted from another row of shelves, wheels a blur, heading for the hole in the wall, with the orangutan hanging on grimly with one hand and flapping behind it like a very fat flag. The wolf leapt.
"Lupine!" shouted Windle.
But from the days when the first caveman rolled a slice of log down a hill, canines have also had a deep racial urge to chase anything on wheels. Lupine was already snapping at the trolley. His jaws met on a wheel. There was a howl, a scream from the librarian, and ape, wolf, and wire basket ended up in a heap against the wall.
"Oh, the poor thing! Look at him!"
Ludmilla rushed across the floor and knelt down by the stricken wolf.
"It went right over his paws, look!"
"And he's probably lost a couple of teeth," said Windle.
He helped the librarian up. There was a red glow in the ape's eyes. It had tried to steal his books. This was probably the best proof any wizard could require that the trolleys were brainless. He reached down and wrenched the wheels off the trolley.
"Olay,"
said Windle.
"Ooh?"
"No, not with milk," said Windle.
Lupine was having his head cradled in Ludmilla's lap. He had lost a tooth, and his fur was a mess. He opened one eye and fixed Windle with a conspiratorial yellow stare while his ears were stroked. "There's a lucky dog," thought Windle. "Who's going to push his luck and hold up a paw and whine?"
"Right," said Windle. "Now, librarian, you were about to help us, I think."
"Poor, brave dog," said Ludmilla.
Lupine raised a paw pathetically and whined. Burdened by the screaming form of the bursar, the other wire basket couldn't get up to the speed of its departed comrade. One wheel also trailed uselessly. It canted recklessly from side to side and nearly fell over as it shot through the gates, moving sideways.
"I can see it clear! I can see it clear!" screamed the dean.
"Don't! You might hit the bursar!" bellowed Ridcully. "You might damage university property!"
But the dean couldn't hear for the roar of unaccustomed testosterone. A searing green fireball struck the skewing trolley. The air was filled with flying wheels. Ridcully took a deep breath.
"You stupid!" he screamed.
The word he uttered was unfamiliar to those wizards who had not had his robust country upbringing and knew nothing of the finer points of animal husbandry, but it plopped into existence a few inches from his face. It was fat, round, black and glossy, with horrible eyebrows. It blew him an insectile raspberry and flew up to join the little swarm of curses.
"What the hell was that?"
A smaller thing flashed into existence by his ear. Ridcully snatched at his hat.
"Damn!"
The swarm increased by one.
"Something just bit me."
A squadron of newly hatched blastards made a valiant bid for freedom. He swatted at them ineffectually.
"Get away, you b—" he began.
"Don't say it," said the senior wrangler.
"Shut up!"
People never told the Arch-Chancellor to shut up. Shutting up was something that happened to other people. He shut up, out of shock.
"I mean, every time you swear, it comes alive," said the senior wrangler hurriedly. "Ghastly little winged things pop out of the air."
"Bloody hellfire,"
said the Arch-Chancellor. Pop, pop. The bursar crawled, dazed, out of the tangled wreckage of the wire trolley. He found his pointy hat, dusted it off, tried it on, frowned, and took a wheel out of it. His colleagues didn't seem to be paying him much attention. He heard the Arch-Chancellor say,
"But I've always done it. Nothing wrong with a good swear. It keeps the blood flowing. Watch out, Dean. One of the buggers..."
"Can't you say something else?"
shouted the senior wrangler above the buzz and whine of the swarm.
"Like what?"
Like darn."
"Darn?"
"Yes, or maybe poot."
"Poot? You want me to say poot?"
The bursar crept up to the group. Arguing over petty details at times of dimensional emergency was a familiar wizardly trait.
Mrs. Whitlow, the housekeeper, always says sugar when she drops something,
he volunteered. The Arch-Chancellor turned on him.
She may say sugar, he growled, but what she means is shit.
The wizards ducked. Ridcully managed to stop himself.
Oh, darn, he said miserably.
The swear words settled amiably on his hat.
They like you, said the Dean.
You're their daddy, said the lecturer in recent runes.
Ridcully scowled. You boys can stop being silly at your Arch-Chancellor's expense and jolly well find out what's going on, he said. The wizards looked expectantly at the air. Nothing appeared.
You're doing fine, said the lecturer in recent runes. Keep it up.
Darn, 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 said the Arch-Chancellor. Sugar, sugar, sugar. Pooty, pootity, poot.
He shook his head. It's no good. It doesn't relieve my feelings one bit.
It's cleared the air, at any rate, said the bursar.
They noticed his presence for the first time. They looked at the remains of the trolley.
Things zooming around, said Ridcully. Things coming alive.
They looked up at a suddenly familiar squeaking noise. Two more wheeled baskets rattled across the square outside the gates. One was full of fruit. The other was half full of fruit and half full of small screaming child. The wizards watched open-mouthed. A stream of people were galloping after the trolleys. Slightly in the lead, elbows scything through the air, a desperate and determined woman pounded past the university gates. The Arch-Chancellor grabbed a heavy-set man who was lumbering along gamely at the back of the crowd. What happened?
I was just loading some peaches into that basket thing when it upped and ran away on me.
What about the child?
Search me. This woman had one of the baskets and she bought some peaches off me and then...
They all turned. A basket rattled out of the mouth of an alleyway, saw them, turned smartly and shot off across the square.
But why?
Said Ridcully.
They're so handy to put things in, right?
Said the man.
I got to get them peaches. You know how they bruise.
And they're all going in the same direction, said the lecturer in recent runes. Anyone else notice that?
After them, screamed the Dean.
The other wizards, too bewildered to argue, lumbered after him.
No,
Ridcully began, and realized that it was hopeless, and he was losing the initiative. He carefully formulated the most genteel battle cry in the history of bodlerism.
Darn them to heck,
he yelled, and ran after the Dean.